Fran fam, what's going on? Listen, before we start this podcast episode, I have a very, very small favor to ask of each and every single one of you guys. I appreciate the support that all of you have been showing for the podcast up until this point, but we want to try and get these episodes out to as many people as possible. And how we do that on the audio side is by leaving a review and dropping a 5-star rating. So if you've been a consistent listener of the pod, please, before we get this episode started, it only takes a couple of seconds, leave a review. It could be a 2-word, 3-word, 4-word review, or just leave a rating. Do something to get the word out so that we can get the Marvin Francois Show to more listeners moving forward. Outside of that, love you guys, appreciate the support, but without further ado, let's get into this episode.
The reason people pay you is because of the transformation that your talent, your time, and your tools can create for them. And so people are coming into the business and they don't want to do sales calls. They don't want to do webinars. They don't want to have conversations in the DMs. They don't want to do anything besides make money without doing the work to make the money. And I'm willing to get on the phone with people and have conversations and let them word vomit. Because the more I can get into your brain, the more I know about my audience, and the more I know about my audience, the easier it's going to be for me to sell. They say the best marketer wins, but the person who does the best market research wins.
Hey, business owners, what if I helped you get access to $50,000 in business funding for $1 a day? Would you be interested? Inside of my Credit Mastery community, you're gonna be getting exclusive access to our in-depth training program that's worth tens of thousands of dollars to give you the exact strategies you need on how to restore your credit and on how to properly structure your business. You're also gonna be getting access to a financial consultant with over a decade of experience in the funding space that'll help you reach your financial goals in half the time it would take if you were to do it on your own. And we're gonna be giving you 2 coaching calls every week that'll give you the exact banks you need to go to get access to $50,000 to $100,000 in business funding. This is the same community that helped Pat get access to $50,000 in funding from Chase, helped Alvin get access to $8,000 in funding from Amex, helped Matt boost his personal credit score by 150 points, and helped Donna delete a bankruptcy from her credit report. So if you're interested, click the link above or below this video to join now, and we'll see you on the other side of success. Let's go, family.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Marvin Francois Show, your number one source for all things business, finance, and investing. And today is a very special day because our guest today is a woman of God, entrepreneur, investor, mentor, public speaker, coach, and business branding specialist extraordinaire. She's the CEO of Built to Impact, a business tailored around helping early stage entrepreneurs master the message, package their expertise, and build profitable businesses. Whether she's hosting masterminds, teaching entrepreneurs how to position their genius through content creation to attract high-end clientele, or speaking from stage at Impact Weekend, teaching business owners to create profitable launches to help their companies reach multiple 6 to 7 figures, her 15 plus years of serving thousands is proof that her success in the space is not coincidence, it's confirmation. And today, she's here to do more of the same. Ladies and gentlemen, from Alabama by way of Atlanta, Georgia, I'm here with the one, the only, Miss Maya Elias. What's going on, family? How are you?
Hey, thank you so much.
How are you? How's everything? Thank you for being on the pod.
Thank you. I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. This has been a long time coming. I've been watching you from afar. You are definitely one of the most prominent names in the space where you talk about messaging, marketing, and branding. And I'm excited to get into this conversation.
Thanks. Me too.
Yeah, for sure. So I know I did an okay job introducing you, right? But nobody knows Maya better than the woman herself. So for those who are unfamiliar, let's get them familiar. Who exactly is Miss Maya Elias?
Yeah. So from a business standpoint, personal branding strategist, messaging expert, I've been in the branding space for 15 years, started out as a web and graphic designer, started out creating MySpace pages for people. And, you know, it was funny, before we started the interview, I was fixing the pillows in the back, and you're like, are you OCD? And I'm like, no, but one of my core values is aesthetic and presentation. Mm-hmm. And that is really how I got into the branding space, by, you know, creating pretty websites online for people and not knowing that they wanted these pretty websites to be a way to portray themselves a certain way. So when I started out, you know, as a web designer, I didn't even know what branding was at the time. I didn't know I was helping people build their brand through having an online platform. So I'm just excited to be here. I'm excited that I've been doing this for so long and still helping people build their brands.
Okay. Well, let's go back a bit, because like you said, you've been doing this for some time, but there were a lot of steps that you took to get here. So let's go back to 2008. At that time, you're in school, mm-hmm. you're pursuing a degree in mass communications, mm-hmm. And at the time, an offer comes across your table to start to design a MySpace page, and that completely changes everything. What did life for you look like at that point in time?
I mean, I'm 18 years old, and I'm newly in Charlotte, North Carolina. I grew up in Pennsylvania, and so I'm just really new to adulthood, new to college. And so when somebody offered me money to create a MySpace page, I was surprised. I was excited. I'm like, I can't believe somebody's going to give me money for something that I'm doing for fun and for free anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, well, let me take the money. Let me figure it out. And that was really like what the first few years of entrepreneurship was. It was mm-hmm. like people offering money for something and then me going on YouTube and figuring it out.
Okay. So you get the offer. You start getting your feet wet in the entrepreneurial space. Mm-hmm. At what point in time now do you get to a point where it's just because at a certain point you didn't stay in school, you actually ended up dropping out. Mm-hmm. What happened there?
Yeah. So, you know, first few years, I'm figuring it out. I didn't really pursue entrepreneurship. I kind of stumbled across it when somebody offered me money and mm-hmm. I'm like, OK, this is interesting. I didn't really know that this is how it worked. You know, mm-hmm. I just thought I'm first generation American to two Liberian parents. Mm-hmm. And so when they came to this country, they came by way of education. And so they really instilled education in me and my sister. So in my mind, I'm like, I need to go to a good college. I'm going to get a good job. I'm going to live the American dream. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, me making money on my own without getting a formal job, without getting a degree was really shocking to me. So I started to actually get better. I started to study my craft a little bit more. And then I realized this is real. Like, people are trusting me with my craft. I am making decent money. And when I dropped out of college, at this point, I'm 23 because it took me so long in the college experience because I'm focused on my business. So it's kind of like I'm halfway in and I'm halfway out. So I either would take a semester off or I would be on academic probation because I'm more focused on creating club flyers than I am in biology. So yeah. It's like it took me a while. But by the time that I dropped out, I think I was making maybe like $3,000, $4,000, maybe finally hitting that $5,000 a month mark. And mm-hmm. I'm like, OK, I really do want to do this full time. If I didn't have school in the way, I could really do this. Mm-hmm. And so once I realized, OK, I have consistent enough clientele, okay, I'm going to drop out. And it was the scariest decision of my life, but absolutely the most profitable and impactful decision. So
as I'm listening to you speak, I didn't realize, because I also dropped out as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm of Haitian descent. You're of Liberian descent. Mm-hmm. Coming from that African background, I think Haitians and Africans are similar in that you only really have like three career choices. So it's doctor, lawyer, engineer. And if you're not that, like, you are not my child.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
What was that conversation like with mom and dad? Because I'm sure they wasn't like, oh, yeah, we believe it. You could do it. Leave, right? I'm sure there was some friction there. Walk me through that.
Yeah, there was some friction. I mean, obviously, I dropped out and then told them after because I wasn't going to consult them about, you know, a decision that I knew what their response would be. And so I'm like, dang, they're going to be so upset with me. They're going to disown me. And I really thought that my dad was going to be the most upset because he was like the disciplinarian and my mm-hmm. mom is the more nurturing one. And so I was like, okay, well, let me tell mom first so then she can tell dad. So that way I'm kind of like safe. And so I remember, you know, I'm living in Charlotte, North Carolina at the time, and I'm at one of our grocery stores called Food Lion. Mm-hmm. And I'm like randomly in the taco aisle and I'm finally just randomly like build the courage to tell her. So I'm like, okay, let me call mom. Mm-hmm. So I call her and this is in November. So we're about to have Thanksgiving break. Then we'll go into the holidays and then you go back for a new semester. And so I was like, so yeah, after Thanksgiving, I'm not going back to school. She's like, what do you mean you're not going back? I'm like, yeah, I dropped out. And she's like, what do you mean you dropped out? I'm like, yeah, so I'm not going back to school. And she instantly starts freaking out. And she's like, there are kids dying in Africa mm-hmm. to go to school. And I'm like, I'm thinking she's dramatic. I'm like, nobody's dying to go to school. Mm-hmm. It may or may not be true. But in my mind, you know, I don't recognize the level of privilege that I have to even be able to make that decision.
Yeah.
I'm just 23 and I'm fearful and I'm like, girl, I'm dropping out to make club flyers. Like, what do you not get? Okay. And so she's freaking out. And so I start yelling back at her because I'm in my mind, I'm like, she should be comforting me mm-hmm. or at least be curious about what I'm going through. And I'm like, whatever, blah, 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 whatever I say. Mm. And I just hung up on her. Mm. And so that was it was not good. I think we both didn't really handle the situation right. And, you know, my boyfriend at the time, his mom had passed away earlier that year. And he was like, if my mom was alive, I would call her and apologize to her. So I'm like, well, let me call. Also, he and I were going there for Thanksgiving in a couple weeks. So it was like, if I want a Thanksgiving meal, I should probably call my mom and apologize. Right. So I called and apologized. And she still laughs at me to this day because she was like, "Are you?" She was like, you cussed me out over dropping out of school. And I was like, I'm sorry. Then my dad was like, okay, if this is the decision that you want to make, cool. And I was like, really? That's it? And then like 6 months later or like a year or two later, I don't even remember the exact time frame. This had to have been 2 years later because I'd already moved to Atlanta. He sends me an email. I'm like, you're my dad. You can call me. He sends me an email and says, have you considered persevering to go back to school? And I was like, it's not a matter of perseverance. It's a matter of purpose. Like, I don't believe that I should be in school. I believe I should be running my business full time.
It's not a matter of perseverance. It's a matter. Those were the exact words that you said to him at the time.
I think I said it's not a matter of perseverance. I don't remember what I said after that, but I know that's what I was feeling. I was like, I believe that I should be running my business full time.
And that's interesting because you made the decision, you know, there are a lot of individuals that feel like, all right, the business has to be making X amount of money and I need to be super established. And then maybe, possibly, potentially, I'll consider it. Yeah. You took a very strong, bold leap of faith. For you, where did that sense of conviction come from? Was it more of not wanting to look back and think to yourself, like, damn, shoulda, woulda, coulda? Or was it more like, no, the future is bright. I know this is it. I'm all in. Where did that come from?
I mean, I was probably 18 to 24 months late in making that decision. It's like for years I had known, but I was just so fearful. And I wanted to please my parents and, you know, do the right thing and finish school. And I was like, girl, you're just not even doing well in school because your mind is not there.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of back and forth and just getting some wise counsel. You know, again, I was dating somebody at the time. His dad was a retired pastor. And so I had a conversation with him, and that really, I don't even remember what his dad said. I just remember feeling a level of support that just made me feel better. And I was not sleeping. I definitely know I was experiencing some level of anxiety. I couldn't name it at the time. And I'm like, girl, just drop out. Also, what actually happened was one of my clients, they were part of some conference that was in Vegas, and I designed all of their branding for their activation that they had going on. And I came through for them last minute. I found them the printers and just made sure they had everything they needed. And he was so grateful. He's like, I'm going to fly you and your boyfriend out to Vegas. I want you to come see the work that you did, and you guys can stay for a few days. And so, you know, I went to all of my professors and I'm like, hey, I have a work trip for a couple of days. Can I take any tests early or take them when I get back? And I remember one of my instructors, it was for a class, matrices. And it's like, what is that class? It's like some math class where I'm probably already not doing well because what is matrices and when am I ever going to use it?
Yeah.
And he was like, no, you'll just have to fail this test and hope that your best one replaces it. Because you remember in school when they would say, like, if you do bad on one test, then your best grade can replace it or whatever.
I remember that, yeah.
And I was like, I cannot believe that I'm paying money for somebody to tell me that my only option is to fail versus I can't just take it early. And I was like, this is silly. I'm just not playing this game anymore. And that's when I dropped out. And then a week later, that's when I told my mom.
So let's take a couple steps forward, right? We had the conversation with mom, had the conversation with dad. Cool. All in on business.
Mm-hmm.
When we were at a point now where the business is doing about around like 5K a month, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and that was really like the high end then. So between three and 5K.
Three and 5K. What are your earliest memories of entrepreneurship at that point?
I remember I was building my personal brand. I was blogging. I was talking about my experience as a designer, telling people how to build your brand, how to choose colors, fonts. And I also remember my parents being like, why are you telling the internet how much money you're making?
Okay.
they're like you don't see people coming home and posting, you know, their paychecks. And I'm like, this is completely different.
Yeah.
But also what I remember is I didn't really have a lot of bills at that time. You know, I'm 23. I think I had a roommate. My rent was $600. And my dad still paid my phone bill up until I dropped out. So my expenses were maybe $1,000 a month. So even though I knew $3,000 wasn't a lot of money in comparison to what I wanted to be doing, which was $8,333 to have my $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was still enough and that I could figure it out. So once I started doing $4,000 a month consistently, getting closer to that $5,000, hitting it here and there, I was like, I think that if I really went all in with this, I could actually hit my goals.
So now was there a specific moment, or was it a series of moments that ultimately take you from, okay, people know me for, you know, creating MySpace pages to now, like, no, I am a brand building expert. Mm-hmm. What was that for you?
Yeah. So let's see. 2013, I'm still a designer, and I recognized how I got into messaging and really discovering that was my gift was a lot of clients were paying to look pretty online. They wanted the pretty website. They wanted the matching social media, all of the pretty things, but they didn't know how to articulate what their products would do for their clients or their customers. So they just really weren't selling. There was no strategy behind what they were doing. And so I was helping them close that gap between simply having a website and actually getting people to the website, clicking on something and buying. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my clients, they would call me and say, like, well, what should my about me say? Or what should my contact page say? Or what should be the description for this product? And I'm a millennial. I don't like to talk on the phone. So if you're going to call me all the time as a designer to ask me questions about copy and what your message should say, I need a charge for this. And that's how I got into coaching. And I didn't know it was coaching at the time or consulting, whatever it was. I just called it consulting. And I'm like, I'll answer questions for you about your business and your brand. And I think at the time I was charging maybe $75 an hour, if that. And I was like, cool, people are really going to pay me for this. Mm-hmm. I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurship has been for me. Like, oh, y'all really going to pay this? Cool. Yeah. And then people get results.
Yeah. I think people overestimate what the process is to really grow in the space. To your point, it's really just a lot of like, oh, I guess this is what we do now. Like, even me and you were talking about this off camera about just like how I even got into podcasting. Like, a lot of times the best things that can happen for your business are things that just come naturally as you're navigating this journey, but you don't get there unless you keep pressing forward.
Right. And that come naturally, but also come as a result of like, let me do this even if it feels awkward, even if I don't feel qualified. Because I don't know about you, but I didn't necessarily feel qualified to coach, but I did know that people were asking me, right? Yeah. I don't know if you necessarily felt qualified to podcast, but people were asking you.
Yeah.
So it was like, cool, just saying yes to something that you might not even feel qualified to do. And not from a lack of integrity, because, you know, in this space, people are like, they're scammers. Not from that place, but it's like, this is something that people have shown that they trust me with.
Yeah.
Why am I the one that's self-sabotaging and saying no?
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So let's dive into it, because you said something key, right? It's not about just having pretty websites or, in today's day and age, a flashy Instagram. Mm-hmm. There's strategy when we talk about brand and when we talk about messaging that a lot of entrepreneurs are missing. And they're probably one or two tweaks away from going from doing no money at all to potentially 5 to 10K, 10 to 20K months and beyond. And I want to unpack that in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Let's start off ground zero.
Yeah.
How would you define brand or define branding?
I mean, when I look at a brand, I look at your overall reputation of when someone, how do they associate with you? Mm-hmm. Like when people say Maya Elias, do they think of impacting? Do they think of Impact Weekend? Do they think of faith? Do they think of coaching, messaging? Mm-hmm. It's like, I know the specific keywords that people think about when they see my name. Or if somebody sees the word impact, do they instantly think about Maya Elias, or do they think of Built to Impact My Company? And so it's that association of what is it that you are known for? And when you are building your brand, you're responsible to create that perception of what you want to be known for until you've created enough proof and evidence where other people now start to say it about you.
That's good. Why is building brand and having a strong brand so important to the growth and success of our business?
Because brand, it creates trust. It creates instant trust. And, you know, I was doing another podcast earlier today, and we were talking about like marketing funnels and sales funnels and how it can feel so complicated for people. And I'm like, really, with the funnel, it's about where people find you, the message that they hear, them trusting you enough to share their information, whether it's a phone number or email, them being nurtured, through text, email, or whatever, and then offered a product or service and then buying. But from the moment they find you, that level of trust has to be built. And that's really what your brand is. And so people can find you in different places, which is why you have to be cognizant about where people find you. So mm-hmm. for example, like being on this show, a lot of people trust the people that you interview. Yep. They trust your perspective on business. They trust your perspective on money. So there's already instantly a built-in trust that, okay, if Marvin is interviewing Maya, I'm going to at least trust enough to sit and listen to what she has to say.
Yeah.
Then that next level is, well, let's see what Maya then has to say. Now it's my responsibility to show up, answer questions, position myself well. That is part of my brand, how I'm showing up. Then they're like, okay, I trust her enough. She gave away a freebie or whatever it is, or I'm going to follow her. What is she consistently saying? There could be something that I post, let's say it's something political, and mm-hmm. they see it and they completely agree and they're like, I knew I liked her. Yeah. Or it could be something where they're like, I knew something was off about her. Trust is broken. They unfollow.
Right.
And so when you're building a brand, it's about maintaining trust with who your ideal client is. There's people, obviously, who are going to unfollow, unsubscribe, whatever. And it's like they probably weren't your people anyway. So we don't build a brand to try to attract everybody. We build a brand to maintain a level of trust and relationship with people who would deem our ideal clients.
This is about to get fun. All right, let's take it up another level.
Okay.
We're talking about brand. You also talk a lot about brand positioning mm-hmm. and some of the questions that go into that. You have, I don't know if I would call it a framework, but just certain questions that I've heard you ask, which is around brand, which is, who are you? Who do you serve? Mm-hmm. How do you serve them?
Yep.
Who are you in the marketplace? Mm-hmm. What are your gift, skills, and talents? Mm-hmm. And then what are the problems that you serve slash solve?
Yeah.
I want to break each and every single one of those down.
Okay.
Simple question, but it's so multi-layered. How do we, when we talk about brand, how are we answering the question of who are you? Because I'm a lot of things, right? I'm a Haitian man. I'm a Christian. Yep. I'm doing this podcast, mm-hmm. right? I'm a human being. But when we talk about brand, how are we answering that question?
Oh, that is really good. So when we answer the question of who you are, it's interesting because I feel like that's one of the number one things that people struggle with is their identity. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to answer that question. They're like, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. And then they start to minimize themselves. Before they even answer the question, they initiate by minimizing themselves. Like, well, I just do this, or I'm not really an expert or whatever, but here's what I do for fun.
Yeah.
And so from a branding perspective, especially building your personal brand, I like people to showcase who they are on the human side. How can you humanize your brand? And then the expert positioning side, who are you in the marketplace?
Yeah.
So when we look at Maya Elias, the brand, if I were to say, you know, and I ask my clients this, what are some things that you know about me that have nothing to do with business? They'll say, you like to travel, mm-hmm. you like to work out, mm-hmm. you like to twerk, you love to be a rich auntie. Those literally have nothing to do with business.
Right.
But the girls who get it.
Yeah.
And they vibe with me just off of that. Like, she's fun. She's cool. She's living a life that I would like to have. She's traveling. She looks good. Now let me see what she has to say. So that's the human side of my brain that they are connecting with, because they see a version of themselves in me and my lifestyle. And then they see the positioning side where they see, okay, Maya gives, you know, tips on messaging. Maya talks about how to make money. Maya tells her story. Maya talks about mistakes that she's made. Maya has tons of testimonials that she can highlight. Maya is a business coach. She's a messaging guru. She is the person that a lot of coaches that I trust go to. And so there's that duality of, like, I trust Maya as the human and I trust Maya as the expert.
That's good. All right. So if I try doing that for myself, I'm going to go through this with you. So, mm-hmm. so there's a personal side and a business side.
Yeah.
So if I do me the personal side and someone's like, all right, what are the non-business things someone associates with me? I like to work out.
Yeah.
Right. I'm very heavy into like Caribbean culture. Mm-hmm. Right. So like I'm of a Haitian background, but I love learning about, you know, Jamaicans and Trinidadians and Nigerians and Ghanaians and all these different things. What else is there? And you just keep rattling down the list. Yeah. Pretty much. Okay. Okay.
You be going to carnival?
No, I can't dance. We don't do that. if you see me in carnival, it's not me.
That is hilarious. Okay.
Okay, but there are personal things that, like, it establishes that emotional connection that my audience may have with me.
Yeah.
That's totally separate from business. Like, I just like Marvin as a person, pretty much.
For sure. You know what's an easy way to do that?
Talk to me.
When I used to teach people blogging, so really big on blogging, 2015, 2016, and I used to say blogging is just a sophisticated rant. One of the easiest ways actually to connect with people is to talk about your biggest pet peeve, but in a sophisticated way. Okay. Not just in like a ranty way where you're just one of those people that just word vomits on the internet, but like have a level of like sophistication and thought process behind the things that annoy you. And so even when I'm teaching my clients, like, well, how do you discover your passion? What is that? Mm-hmm. Typically, when we talk about ourselves or the things that we're passionate about, we talk about the things that we love, mm-hmm. right? And I'm like, our passion isn't really just the things that we love. It's also the things that we hate. Mm-hmm. Like when you think about the biggest movements, they are derived out of the things that we hate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that I hate is I hate to see when Christians operate with a lack mindset, and so they undercharge, and then they're not making enough money to just cover their basic necessities. So I've built an entire brand off of helping Christian women understand their worth, increase their rates, and make more than enough for their needs and more than enough even for their wants. And so talking about that, somebody can hear that and be like, you know what? I'm sick and tired of that too. I wanna follow along with this. People like to follow mission. And people get along based off of their pet peeves and things that they don't
yeah,
like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, this is good, Maya. This is good. This is good. All right. Okay, 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 okay. That breaks down the who are we or
yes.
who am I?
Yep.
Now we want to get into who do we serve, which is a very, very big one, right? Mm-hmm. Because especially for a lot of early stage business owners, I think one of the biggest mistakes that they make is they think everyone is their customer. Everybody yes. is not your client. Everybody mm-hmm. is not your customer. But there needs to be, I guess, a strategy or a framework that we give to these business owners so they understand how to identify who it is that we do and don't want to serve. Can yeah. you break that down for us?
For sure. So yeah, when it comes to, you know, building our audience, thinking about who our ideal customer is, to your point, people will be like, well, it's everybody. You know, I can help everybody. And, you know, generally speaking, as a business coach, business strategy is business strategy, right? It's just a formula. You create a product, you price it for profit, and you make sure that you're bringing in more revenue than you're putting out in expenses. That's business. You got to get people to buy it.
Yeah.
Could that advice help this person who has a business and this person who has a business who have completely different backgrounds? Yes, it could. But when you're thinking about your ideal client, you're also thinking about who you're naturally attracting. Mm. And so when I take a look at who my audience is, it's going to be primarily Black women. It's yeah. going to be primarily Christian women. Then second, women who are spiritual, women who want to make at least $100,000. So you're taking a look at a couple different aspects. This is kind of where the human side comes to it. Black women typically trust me because they want to receive advice from people who look like them. They're yeah. like, Maya's evidence of what's possible for me because she looks like me. She believes in the same things that I do.
Yeah.
And so also when we're answering the question of who am I, considering what your values are, because you want to connect with people who have aligned values.
Yeah.
So the people that you're going to connect with, they might look like you from a demographic standpoint. You might be looking at, you know, age range, you know, and people are like, yeah, my audience is, you know, Black women 30 to 45. Mm-hmm. And that's great, too. So that's the first aspect of who you serve. You mm-hmm. know, you can create a visual picture of them. Mm-hmm. Now, the second thing that we need to really think about is what really matters to them, though. Mm-hmm. What is, when we're thinking about value in our audience, what we have to take a look at is, what is their biggest pain point and what is their biggest desire? Mm. What is keeping them up at night? What are they secretly Googling? Mm-hmm. What are they asking ChatGPT that they're afraid to ask anybody else? What are the answers that they are seeking? You really want to get to know that part beyond they, you know, live in America and they're 30 and they have two kids. You know, when you fill out those little
U.S. Census survey.
Yeah, the little client avatar forms that y'all probably downloaded for free. Like, yeah. What age is she? But it's like, what are her hobbies? No, what is keeping her up at night and what is she ultimately seeking? That's what you really want to know.
What's keeping your clients up at night and what are they seeking?
Yeah.
No, I'm asking you personally.
Oh, mine?
Yeah.
Oh, they struggle with knowing how to articulate what they do.
Mm-hmm.
They struggle with the level of imposter syndrome, not because they think that they're not good at what they do, but because they don't have evidence of people paying them well for what they do.
Mm.
They hate social media, all of them, which I don't blame them. They hate it because social media can be annoying, but they also hate it because they're like, nothing is working. And then I go look and they post 4 times a year. And I'm like, no, it's not that nothing is working. It's mm-hmm. that you're not working.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to show up consistently. They don't know how to show up, period. How do I show up consistently? How do I show up as an expert? they don't know how to get people to say yes to their price points. That's what's keeping them up at night. They're like, can I really do this? Do I have to be low ticket forever? Am I ever going to be able to get somebody to pay me $1,000, $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 for my expertise? Mm. That's what's keeping them up at night. What they truly desire is to just figure out a proven way to just get clients, right? If I can just get four clients to pay me $3,000 per month, I'll be happy. Mm. You know, they're like, if I could just get to that first like $10,000 to $12,000 a month, I'll be happy. It's enough to cover my bills. And then I want to figure out how to grow from there. Like, those are the things that they're really wanting.
Alex Hormozi, he has a quote where he says, your business will never be too big for you to speak to your customers. And the reason why I quote that is because you just so eloquently, just like, you didn't have to think about it. Like, well, what is keeping my customers up at night? Like, just listening to you talk about it, let me know, like, okay, you're actively speaking to your target avatar every single day. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also important for people who are watching at home as well, because wherever you are in your business right now, I don't care if you're making hundreds of thousands or if you're trying to make your first 10K, simply asking the question like, hey, what's the biggest problem that you're dealing with right now in your business or in your life? Like, those are the simple questions that can make or break how you're building the brand. Mm-hmm. And also, like you said, how we're going about or who we're serving. And then, of course, we'll transition in a second to how we're serving. But just asking those questions is super duper important. So
it is. I think a lot of people disregard or minimize the market research phase of building a business.
Come on.
Okay, because
let me sit up.
Too many of us are feeling like we are too good to do market research.
Come
we
on.
Come into entrepreneurship feeling entitled to people paying us simply because we have a skill.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing that I've recognized, you know, going from being a creative, a designer, to then transitioning to doing strategy sessions, selling courses, running my own coaching programs, is that a lot of people feel entitled to be paid because they are talented. Mm. Because of the amount of time it takes them to do the work or because of the tools that they leverage to use their work. For example, if my videographer is like, you should pay me all of this money because my lens is expensive and it's the best. I don't care. Mm-hmm. And so we don't do market research. And when we don't do market research, we don't actually know why people pay us, which is why they're not paying us. We don't know why people pay us, which is why they are not paying us. That's really what's happening. So you want to know why people will pay you? Should we talk about
it? Let's talk about it.
All right.
We're here.
So again, you think people should pay you because of your talent, right? I'm so good at what I do. I'm the best compared to any other, blah, 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 whatever your expertise is. Uh-huh. It takes me, you know, 10 hours to edit these photos as a photographer. It takes me blah, blah, blah. I have the best camera. I have a great laptop. I have all of these tools that I have. You're supposed to do all of those things.
Yeah.
The reason people pay you is because of the transformation that your talent, your time, and your tools can create for them. Mm-hmm. And transformation is going to be based on how do you get them from pain point to desire? And you can't get anybody from pain point to desire when you don't know their pain point and desire. And you're not going to know their pain point and desire until you have a conversation with them. And so people are coming into the business and they don't want to do sales calls. They don't want to do webinars. They don't want to have conversations in the DMs. They don't want to do anything besides make money without doing the work to make the money. And I'm willing to get on the phone with people and have conversations and let them word vomit. We have this thing about like, I don't want people to pick my brain. You want to pick my brain? Let's get on the phone. I'm going to pick your brain because the more I can get into your brain, the more I know about my audience and the more I know about my audience, the easier it's going to be for me to sell. They say the best marketer wins, but the person who does the best market research wins.
Ladies and gentlemen, I got Maya in her bag. I got Maya in her bag. This is my, and we haven't even gotten started. We just getting warmed up. This is flawless. All right, hold on. You just gave me the perfect alley-oop because now we're talking about how do we serve? We identified who we're serving. Now we're talking about how do we serve them. And you kind of started to unpack it already, but what are those actionable steps that we're taking to figure out how we're serving our target avatar? We figured out who we are. We figured out who we're serving. Now, how are we going about serving them?
Yes. So when we're thinking about how do we serve, we want to look at two different things. We want to look at the package of how we're serving them, and then we want to look at the outcomes. So the package meaning, do I want to serve them with a book? Do I want to serve them with a live event? Do I want to serve them with one-on-one coaching? Do I want to serve them with a mastermind group coaching? So we often think about the packaging, like, okay, well, I think I want to have a group coaching program. It's going to be 6 months. I'm not really sure how much I want to charge for it. We think about all of the logistical things of how we serve our clients. And that's great and dandy, but it doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter what your package is until your client understands what the package can do. Mm. What is the outcome going to be? So what will 3 months of working with you do? Mm. What will coming to your event for 3 days do for me, for my life or business? And so you have to be able to answer the question, how will somebody's life, business, family, finances, relationship, whatever your expertise is, change as a result of having access to your genius? And so, again, that transformation is going to come from understanding where they want to be. Mm. And that gap between their pain and their desire, you as the expert, you have to fill in that gap with a step-by-step process, which we call signature framework. What is the signature framework for getting somebody clear messaging? What is the signature framework for helping somebody get $50,000 in business funding? What is the framework for helping a first-time mom, you know, lose 20 pounds postpartum, right? Mm-hmm. So there, you have to be able to answer that question. When you're having sales conversations, you let people share what their pains are. You let people share what their desires are. You let them know, I understand this. I've been through it, or I've had clients who've been through the exact same thing. What we do is, first we do this, right? You said you're struggling with this. Well, the first week we work together, we're going to be able to overcome XYZ. Week two, we're going to do this. Step three, we do this. By step four, you'll be able to have this. That's really how you're going to best serve your clients, by understanding your own framework and being able to package it well and articulate it to them.
When we talk about the packaging side, now it starts to stem into another very interesting conversation, because I think that's also another thing most business owners struggle with, right? Okay, I want to serve my target audience. Mm-hmm. Do I serve them through a course? Do I serve them through this coaching program? Do I serve them through a mentorship? Do I serve them through a done-for-you service? Mm-hmm. How are you coaching your clients on, is it an and situation where it's like you're helping them with courses and mentorships, or is it an or situation where mm-hmm. we're doing, well, you only want to serve them with mentorship, stay away from courses? Like, what's that approach?
Yeah. So I help my clients do, you know, courses, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, membership, workshops, whatever it is they desire to do. But we do kind of take a look at some things. We look at, you know, their lifestyle. What do you have the capacity to actually do? Mm. We look at the level of trust that they have built or not built online. I think done for you is like the easiest way to get started, because you're really not having to prove much. You're either going to build a website or you're not. Like with coaching, there's a little, you have to build a little bit more of trust, because now the client has to do the work based on what you have coached them on. Typically, people are wanting to go straight into group coaching because they're saying, well, I don't want to do one-on-one, which is understandable. I do typically advise that people start with one-on-one, because you can master group coaching when you know the common questions that your clients are going to be asking. Mm-hmm. And so like when I look at my program, I have a group coaching program, but everybody still feels served and people are still able to get results, even though it's not one-on-one coaching, because I know all of the problems that they're all dealing with. I attract the same type of people, so they have the same pain points, the same problem, and I answer those questions for them. And the framework works for everybody in the program, because everybody is dealing with the same things and desires the same results. So also with in-person events, I recommend that for people who have built a level of trust, because there's a more of an investment to like physically leave your house, pay for a hotel, all of that. Yeah. So I can help my clients with all of those, because I've been able to make six figures or even seven figures with all of those different offers. Mm-hmm. But I do take a look at, are you ready to start here? Should you start with this? What is the level of transformation that you're wanting to have? I know for sure that with coaching, you're going to have a higher level of transformation than if you sell a course, because just having access to somebody to ask questions on things that you might not be clear on, or you implemented something from the curriculum, but you need feedback on it. And so it just really depends, like, what's your end game? What is your end game? Do you have capacity? How much transformation do you want them to have? How much access do you want them to have? You could do all of the things. It just really depends on a few different factors.
So now, how do we take all of that and package it? I believe you call it a brand message. How do we now package that into who we are, who are we serving, and how do we serve them? How do we mm-hmm. package that into a direct message? So when we come into the marketplace,
yeah,
our target audience is like, oh, you're speaking to me. Okay, I'm sold. I'm ready to jump on it. What does that look like?
Yeah. So this is what, you know, we call our expert statement. My clients ask me about this all the time. Like, they get so excited to figure out what's their expert statement. And it's the I am a, you know, whatever your title is, mm-hmm, who helps whoever your audience is, mm-hmm, achieve blank, whatever the outcome is, right? So like I can use different titles: personal branding strategist, launch strategist, messaging expert, business coach. I kind of just use them interchangeably. Sometimes it depends on my audience or like where I'm speaking. Mm-hmm. So I might say, you know, I'm a business coach and a messaging expert. I work with women of faith who want to master their message and increase their rates so they can build a six-figure business. Mm-hmm. So that expert statement, that's you putting all of those things together.
Mm. So now, a bit of a curveball here, right? So let's say somebody's watched our conversation, mm-hmm, and they're like, great, got it. Framework set. I got my brand message. Let's go make some money, mm-hmm, right? I know who I am, who I serve, how I serve. Great. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, I don't like this audience all that much. Mm-hmm. I'm over here fighting chargebacks. People over here talk about like, well, why is it cost so much? Mm-hmm. I think I gotta, some people call it pivot, or I have to do a rebrand, which I'm sure you're laughing. So I'm assuming it's something you've run into. What does that now look like? Because, you know, that can happen, right? You can, mm-hmm, come in gung-ho thinking that this is it. I'm planting my flag in this industry. 18 chargebacks later, you're like, you know what? You know what? This ain't doing what I thought it was going to do. I want to go somewhere else. What's the approach there? If you've ever had a client of yours come to you about a potential rebrand, are there pros? What are the pros and cons to that? Is it something you implore? Is it just like, no, you're here. You gotta ride this thing out.
Oh, God. Well, I'm just laughing because I think people think they need to rebrand when they just need to be consistent. And I find that people are...
I didn't say anything. Go ahead.
I just find that people are wanting to rebrand because they think a new photos or an updated website is going to do anything for them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really big on personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look at myself first before I put blame on anybody else. If I get 18 chargebacks, it's not my audience, it's me. Mm. Because what's going on in my program that people don't feel instantly like they should pay me more money, that they should actually get their money back. Mm-hmm. That's wild. So it's not, I'm not anti-rebrand, but I am pro, mm-hmm, take a look at what's going on over here before I think a rebrand is going to solve my problem. Mm. Rebrands rarely solve problems. They just put paint over what the actual issue is. And then you run into the issue again. It's like literally putting paint on mold. Mm. Like, the mold's still gonna come through anyway. If there's a leak, it's gonna come through anyway. So when you find that you're running into issues, you have to ask yourself, why is this happening? And put aside blame on the person or the group of people first and say, well, what are some things that I could potentially change about what I have created, mm-hmm, that could help me to alleviate or eliminate this problem?
This is good. There's something that you talked about that I thought was very interesting, and I think a lot of business owners need to hear. Most of your messaging is around helping people get to six figures. Mm-hmm. You've gotten to seven multiple times. But one of the things that you've talked about is the reason why you're more focused on teaching individuals how to get six figures, because for you personally, you feel as though that's your level of expertise, because you've done that more times,
yeah,
than you've helped individuals get to seven. And I thought that was so powerful, because it's like, I think you have business owners in the space to where it's like, once they get to like 999,000, it's like, all right, I can start teaching people how to get seven figures. I'm a seven figure coach now. Let's go. Let's get money.
Yep.
Right. But for you, it's just like to have the sense of self-awareness to say, I have gotten there.
Yeah.
But I just feel a lot more confident and convicted teaching individuals how to get here, mm-hmm, instead of there. What are those conversations like when you're speaking with clients of yours that, whether they want to coach or serve in whatever regard, may be trying to teach from a place where either they haven't been there, mm-hmm, or they've been there? I feel like when I'm asking these questions, you're like getting memories that are coming back to you real time. It's just like, yeah, I just spoke to someone last night about this.
Right.
Yeah. But no, like, what are those conversations like where you're speaking to your clients? It's like, I want to teach people how to make eight figures. It's like, Sally, you haven't made five yet. It's like, I know, but let me do it. I believe in myself. What are those conversations like?
Sally Kittredge out here. So, I mean, I'm really big on integrity. I'm a core values person. So when I say I'm big on something, it's a core value of mine. Integrity is it. And I want to teach I like to teach from a place of mastery, and it's a requirement that our clients do the same. Hmm. So in order to be a client of ours, you have to be an actual proven expert. When you apply to work with us, one of the questions we ask is, how long have you been in your industry? Mm-hmm. And we also ask, what results have you been able to get for yourself or other people? Because that's what we're going to, quote unquote, allow you to sell from a place from. So if you say, you know, I'm a social media expert, and I've been able to help at least 3 clients, you know, 5x their social media following and maybe increase some sales. Cool. I'm happy to help you build out a program and offer whatever it is, help you increase your rates, because I know people are going to get results. Now, if you come inside of our program and now you get inspired by my curriculum and you love how I teach business coaching and messaging, and now you all of a sudden want to become a messaging expert, I'm not going to shut you down. I'm going to ask you a series of questions where the questions is there. It's going to give you the answers that you need to know. And so I have had instances where some clients will say, well, I think I want to pivot to this, or mm-hmm. I think I want to rebrand to this. And I'll say, OK, when was your first time that you've been able to do this? How many people have you been able to help? Mm-hmm. And if the answers are inadequate, I'll say, I really believe that you need more experience in this and you need more evidence of being able to do this before you move into that. And most people are receptive, because I'm not trying to shame anybody. Yeah. You know, like, I'm very, my delivery is very, like, it's matter of fact, but it's also like, you don't need to do this. Right. And I want you to be careful and be mindful. I've been in this space for, you know, obviously over a decade, being on social media, being exposed to things, like, don't put yourself in a position where you could tarnish your brand because you got so excited about potentially serving people in a way that you're not quite equipped to serve them in.
Yeah. And that ties perfectly into one of the things where it's like, it takes decades to build a strong brand, but it could take less than a day really to break it down. All it takes mm-hmm. is one moment where it's like, you're not who I thought you were. And then it all comes tumbling down. So that's powerful. We talked a lot about brand. I want to stay in the realm, but kind of somewhat shift gears a little bit. Okay. What is the MVP framework?
The MVP framework is really the framework that you want to have when you're first building your brand and you're trying to get to your first client. So the M is going to be for messaging, mm-hmm. which is the who you are, who you serve, and how you serve them. The mm-hmm. V is going to be visibility. Mm. Now that you are clear on your message, people need to see it. It's not good enough to have the best message and nobody knows what you do. Nobody mm-hmm. knows who you are. So you have to become visible. And with visibility, you want to master building your platform and then leveraging other people's platform. You know, in the investment space where they say, like, you need to be leveraging OPM. You need to be leveraging other people's money. Yep. Same thing with building your brand. You need to be leveraging OPP, other people's platforms. Mm-hmm. You need to do collaborations, joint webinars, go live with them on social, get on their podcast, speak at their events. Mm-hmm. So that's part of visibility. And then the P is profitability. How are you actually converting these people? Do you have a marketing strategy to get them to see what your offer is? And then a way to actually sell them, whether it's on the phone, it's a webinar, it's through DMs, but you need to actually be able to make money.
Well, I want to stay a little bit on visibility. I've come to learn, whenever I sit down with coaches like yourself, one of the biggest things that we always joke about is, a lot of clients that you guys may work with, one of the biggest apprehensions they have around is creating content. I don't want to get on camera. I don't want to get on a webinar. I don't want nobody to see me. Mm-hmm. I don't. But it's like, if no one knows who you are, you ain't gonna make no money.
Right.
What are those conversations that you're typically having with business owners around the MVP framework, whether it's a framework you're providing them on how to make content creation easy, or just make it a lot more digestible for them to where they can get their message, get their brand out into the marketplace?
Yeah. Typically, I'll ask them a series of questions that makes it natural for them to create content, because at the end of the day, content is just a conversation between you and the people you want to serve. And excellent content answers questions. That's why how-to posts are, you know, really popular. Again, when you actually think about your audience and solving their problems, and you really want to get into their hearts and their minds, and you're thinking, what are they searching for on YouTube? What are they asking ChatGPT? What are they searching for on Google in a private browser because they're embarrassed? And so when you're thinking about the questions that they're asking, think about, how would I answer this question?
Yeah.
Right. How to have your first $5,000 a month, even if even if people say your prices are too high. How to become a high ticket coach, even if you've never sold anything for more than $500. How to do this, even if blank, right? Because people are, they're typically searching for how to do something, but then they also have that doubt of like, but what about this?
Yeah.
And so honestly, I think we overthink content because we're really honestly busy trying to prove ourselves. We're like, well, content is positioning and I need to prove myself, which it is. It is expert positioning, but you're positioning yourself by just naturally having a conversation. So I say, just imagine yourself sitting down at a coffee shop and you allow somebody to pick your brain. They come to you and they say, you know, Marvin, I'm really struggling with, you know, business credit and I have absolutely no idea what to say to these people. I pitched some people, you know, I have a little bit of money in my account. I got the LLC, I got the whatever, and I'm just getting denied left and right. And I got bills coming up. You're hearing their heart. You're hearing some of their desires. You're hearing some of their embarrassments. And if you like naturally, especially as people who are generous and we're givers, we would have answers for them. And so it, I find it interesting that as people who are so generous and we want to help people, that content is such a challenge for us. And so if we stopped thinking about it as content and started thinking about it as how could I serve people with my voice, I think it would really shift how we would show up.
That was perfect. Oh my goodness. I wanna switch over now to P, because that's what we're doing. Well, obviously we want to serve and impact, but you know, if we don't have a business that is profitable, then you know, we're what are we doing?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
When we talk about profitability, another conversation that I hear a lot or for a lot of early stage entrepreneurs is, okay, got my messaging. Great. I'm making the content. Great. I have my offer here that I've created around the people that I'm serving and how I'm going to serve them. And you touched on it a couple of times during this episode, but the pricing scare, right? You have a lot of entrepreneurs is like, well, you know, $1,000. I mean, that sounds like, I don't know if I'm ready to start charging $1,000 or $2,000, $3,000. What if they say no? What's going to happen there? How do we now coach business owners around, one, pricing their offers properly? Because it's one thing to have the confidence to be able to charge somebody $5,000, but it has to make sense at the end of the day.
For sure.
So what does that process look like? And then also the mindset around like, no, you are good enough, or you do have everything that you need to be able to walk into the marketplace with confidence and say, hey, it's 5,000, take it or leave it, right? What does that process look like?
Well, I think what's really important to understand, because as a coach who teaches people how to charge high ticket, I think there's a misconception that coaches like me just tell people, slap a price point on it and the price is the price, right?
Charge
your worth. Girl, you need to be charging them 1,000. You need to be charging 5,000. You need to be charging 10,000 with no other evidence of value. And so for me and my clients, again, which is why we screen them, they have to apply, is because high ticket has to be attached to high value. I have to know that there is a correlation with your price point and the value that you are actually giving them. And so I know for me, when I'm charging somebody, the reason I can feel confident is because, you know, I think there's a gap when people are selling, they have this thought process of they are taking money from people, right? It's like, they're like, oh my God, I went to, you know, their bank account and, you know, I did identity theft and I showed up and I just took the money from them and they have no idea where it went. It's like, we're so illogical about it. We think we're taking money from people. But when you truly believe in the value that you are providing, you know that business is just an exchange. It's value in exchange for value. The value you're giving me is monetary and the value I'm giving you is in the form of service, whether it's coaching, whatever it is, and the ultimate transformation. I know for sure that my clients, you know, one of my programs right now is $7,500. I know for sure my clients, if they do the work, they're going to make $7,500 over and over and over and over again. My program is designed to help you make $100,000. What is $7,500? You know, so you have to have that level of clarity of what is the value that I'm offering. And you can have that level of clarity and confidence even if you aren't teaching people how to make money, right? Really, the game is find people who have money where them making money would, they would love for that to be their problem. What I mean by that is you find, you know, let's say you're working with wives or you're working with couples and they're dealing with, like, we're on the brink of divorce or we really love each other, we want to be together, but we just keep arguing. We cannot figure this out for the life of us. We're both miserable. We don't want to get divorced, but we don't want to keep living like this. Like, mm-hmm. what can we do? Mm-hmm. What's $3,000 to fix your marriage? This is your life partner. Mm-hmm. The amount of money, time, and energy that it takes to experience a divorce that you never wanted to happen, what's $3,000? What's $5,000? Seriously. And so also when it comes to, you know, finding the right clients, you have to work with people where the pain point is deep enough that they are willing to part ways with their money. When people aren't willing to part ways with their money, it's because the pain point just isn't deep enough.
Right.
Right. They say, whatever you're not changing, you're choosing. Mm. And so they are either choosing to make an investment to get a different outcome, or they're choosing to try to figure it out on their own and really stay in the same place for another year, another 3 years until they make a different decision.
I might walk out this podcast studio. This is very, very good. This is so for you now, like you said, you personally, you've mm-hmm. been in this space for 15 plus years. Mm-hmm. You've amassed immense amount of success. And I think a lot of people may see you and say, like, all right, I want to get to where Maya's at and, you know, making great money, impacting lives. What's the side of getting to that point or getting to the point that you're at that doesn't make it to Instagram, that doesn't make it to YouTube, that people don't see?
Oh, there's a lot that they don't see. I mean, there's a lot. I would say one of the most challenging things about business is people. Hmm. I think it's the amount of people that rely on me. So mm-hmm. I would say people in terms of the amount of clients that I work with. Mm-hmm. And I love my clients. I'm very particular about who I allow to be a client. So I absolutely love them. And working with my clients, there's different personalities. I pray over my clients. I can, when clients get on a coaching call, they're asking questions about business, but I can see as a coach, like, what are they dealing with mindset-wise, or what are they dealing with spiritually that's actually keeping them from showing up? Mm-hmm. And so just knowing how to deal with that, working with a team, being a leader is one of the most challenging things, because yeah. I'm like, I just actually don't want to do this.
Yeah,
just want to pay you. To me, one of the most challenging things about being a leader that I continue to work on is you have to be able to pour into your team where you're actually coaching your team to mm-hmm. a certain extent. And so it was very challenging for me to understand coaching people that I'm also paying when people were paying me $10,000, $20,000 to then coach them. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, so not only are you getting a paycheck from me, but I now got to coach you.
Yeah.
So leadership, you know, has been something that I've consistently been working on. So just those things, like having doubts about, like, should I make this hire? Should I, you know, take this person full time? Are they in the right seat? Just those things, navigating things that you just haven't experienced on your own as a business owner, trying to make the right decisions.
So at this point, what would you say, I'll call it your North Star, in the sense where me and you were talking about it off camera, and I was just like, hey, how many more years do you think you're going to do Impact Weekend? You're like, every year, I think, is the last year. And then season rolls around, just like, I guess we're doing it again. What's yeah. the North Star for you at this point? Because like you've financially, you've already hit a lot of the different milestones. What is the thing that you would say you're chasing at this point?
That is a great question. Ooh, what I'm chasing at this point is really just continuing to build my coaching programs with clients that I enjoy. And I don't know quite yet what I want to do immediately after. I know for sure that I want to do things in addition to Built to Impact. I know that I want to invest in or purchase income generating businesses. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure yet what that's going to look like. So I'm glad that I have the time, space, and freedom to kind of think about those things, but I'm not 100% sure yet. There was a time where I was like, okay, I'm going to take Built Impact to 100 million, and I'm going to have, you know, other impact coaches. I'm going to teach them my frameworks. And I was really passionate about that. And I got to sort of test out that framework. I had coaches in my program, and clients would get great results learning from my success coaches. And I think things have just shifted in the coaching industry a little bit that I don't think that's the right path for me anymore. So I'm just trying to gauge with all of the things shifting with social media, with the coaching industry, I'm still looking and engaging what is going to be the wisest move for me.
So then even though you're still piecing it all together, for you, when you do get to that point, whatever that point may be, mm-hmm. when you've reached the North Star and it's all said and done, when you reflect back, what would you like for people to say when they look at the impact that you've provided with your businesses and with the individuals that you've coached?
I want people to be able to look at the Maya Elias brand, the Built to Impact brand, and say, Maya helped add more integrity to the coaching space. One, because she had integrity, but because of the people that she helped launch into the coaching space. It actually ended up being my estate planning lawyer. She came to Impact Weekend and she was like, one of your clients helped save my marriage. And I was like, wow. And it was somebody who had worked with me years prior. She actually came back to Impact Weekend and I got to see them together. And she was like, you helped her put together a coaching program and then she marketed it. And I think in her second year of running the program, I joined the program because my husband and I just were not on the same page, and joined her program, and now we're better than we've been in years. And I'm like, whew, that to me is true impact. Not the people I'm directly helping, but the people who are directly impacted as a result of who I helped. And now her kids being able to be in a happy home. Like, wow, a little girl's life is impacted because I was brave enough to create a coaching program and to sell it. And then my client was brave enough to then do the work and then to sell the offer. And then her client was brave enough to say, I think I need to invest in this program. And she did the work. That's really what I love to think about when I think about the work that I'm doing.
Hi, Elias. Thank you for coming on the podcast. This was a very insightful conversation, a very powerful conversation. I'm excited for the potential for a part two. I know we have to get you out of here. Before we do, let the people know where they can find you and let them know what you have going on.
Yes. Yeah, so you guys can find me on Instagram at Maya Elias, MayaElius. If you want to build a six-figure brand, you want to figure out how can I launch? How can I get my messaging in order? I have a free five-figure launch kit. Go to builttoimpact.com/launch kit and it'll teach you everything you need to know.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't already, what are you doing? Take a second, take a minute, take an hour out of your day right here, right now to go ahead, hit the like button, tell a friend to come back and rewatch again. And as always, my name is Marvin Francois. That's my alias. Y'all have been good. We've been great. This has been amazing. Thank you all and God bless. Peace.